10 minutes after my conversation with Electra, I was in the study and Harv had solved the equation. It only took him a millisecond to do the actual solving. I spent the rest of the time explaining to him what Mad Magazine was. Unfortunately, the solution to the equation wasn't exactly the break in the case that I was hoping for.
V.
V?
V.
That's the answer?
Yes. Once we apply the fold-in principle, it's actually very simple.
V?
The equation itself is the most basic two-variable algebraic equation possible, albeit with non-traditional variables. The portion that is obfuscated by the fold is a variation of the Bekenstein-Hawking formula for the entropy of a black hole. All in all, an interesting choice for a dying clue.
So, what does V mean?
Victory? Vigilance? Violation? Perhaps he was pointing out that she was the victim.
You're not helping, Harv.
Well, I'm new at this detective thing. Let me ruminate on the matter for a few nanos.
I had one of the office screens muted and tuned to the sports networks, hoping to catch some late-night highlights. Totally frustrated now, I sat back in my chair and watched the screen. Maybe she got something wrong. She was dying, after all. Maybe she lost a decimal point somewhere and it's supposed to be something else.
There are no decimal points in the equation.
Well, she must have done something wrong. Why else would her last message be the letter V?
Perhaps murders in real life aren't as cleanly defined as they are in novels.
Gee, you think?
Well, at least we solved it.
Yeah, for all the good it will do us. Any luck with Shakes on the autopsy?
We're making some progress.
What was your idea, anyway?
Anal probes.
Say what?
It occurred to me that since we're unable to pierce Miss Thompson's skin, then perhaps we should use her body's pre-existing openings to inspect her internally.
So you,
Yes. Computer-guided nanoprobes. We're sending them through the colon. Once we reach the stomach, we'll be able to check for traces of the poison.
Great.
We also sent probes through the nose and throat.
And it's working?
Her throat muscles were closed and very powerful, so we had to use experimental nanoprobes that were molecular in size. Same thing with her sphincter. It was rather nigh invulnerable as well.
Okay, more information than I need.
In any event, the probes are in, but because of their microscopic size, they have a comparatively long way to travel before reaching the stomach. And it's slow-going navigating the twists and turns of the body, especially the small intestine. It's like a mountain road in New France.
Okay, Harv.
We should have some results soon.
I flipped through a few of the non-sports networks and, unsurprisingly, found footage of Ona on several of them. Tweet. Don't they have any other news to report? That footage is like 4 hours old now.
No, boss. That's live.
What? I leaned forward and looked closer at the screen. Sure enough, this footage was of Ona and her legal posse leaving the Hall of Justice.
Ona Thompson is free tonight after posting a non-disclosed, record-setting amount in bail. Civic sources say that the amount of bond is so great that, if forfeited, it will virtually erase the city's budget deficit for this year.
Ona was at a hastily erected podium, and the press bots were dutifully gathered around her to capture the sound bites.
I'd like to thank you all for coming out here tonight to support me. My innocence in this matter is absolute, and I'll be leaving my defense to my dear friends, these attorneys that you see crowded around me. I know that, with their help, and with the help of their army of faceless legal minions, my innocence will be proven to any who doubt me.
You're not one of the minions, are you?
Shh!
My singular, true goal throughout this nightmarish ordeal has always been to find my sister's killer, and to bring that person, droid, bot, extraterrestrial visitor, or ethereal spirit, to justice.
She's really widening the pool of suspects, isn't she?
After everything I've done for this world, after all the good that I've created with my wealth...
I've known her for 3 days and I've got this thing memorized already. We've heard this speech, what, 4 times already?
5, if you count the recording of it the night of the murder.
What did you say?
I said, you've heard it 5 times if you count the time she recited it on the recording of... Oh my.
I sprang to my feet and grabbed my coat off the rack. Come on, we're going back to Una's ziggurat. Ona's mansion was fairly empty when we arrived a short time later, which shouldn't have surprised me, since everyone living there had either been arrested or killed in the past few days.
I'm afraid that Ms. Thompson is not here at the Nano. She has decided to spend the night at an undisclosed location so as to avoid the throng of press bots outside.
That's okay, computer. We're not here to see her.
What do you mean?
We're here to see you.
Me? I'm afraid I don't have a holographic avatar for you to see.
You're being too literal, computer.
I apologize. How can I help you?
We were wondering if we could see your recording of Forrest's murder.
Certainly. But I fail to see how another viewing will help you.
We want the unedited version this time.
I beg your pardon?
Honest toast? Part of it was missing.
Perhaps Ms. Thompson simply misspoke.
I don't think so. Ona Thompson could give that speech in the vacuum of space and not miss a beat.
Boss, there is no sound in space.
My point, computer, is that you doctored the recording. That's why you were so quiet when the police first arrived. You needed time to create a sanitized version. And when you were finished, you very subtly reminded me of your see-all presence when you gave me that Erte lecture.
You have to admit, the information on Erte was interesting.
Computer, did Ona kill Fora?
No, she didn't.
You're not doing this to protect her, are you?
No, I'm not protecting her.
Who are you protecting, then?
Surely you can figure that out now.
Yeah, I think I can, but I need to be sure. Show me the recording.
As you wish.
The lights in the room dimmed.
I'll say once again.
A screen on the wall beside us came to life. We watched the murder unfold for real this time. And the secret was revealed. We did the rest by the book. The book, of course, being an old dime store pulp mystery novel, but it seemed appropriate.
You're clear on the chain of events, right?
I'm clear.
Because I can prompt you if you get stuck.
I won't get stuck. I need you to help Shakes. I want those autopsy results the nano you get them. It had been a little more than an hour since Harv and I had seen the unedited recording of the murder. We were now back in the dining room of Ona's mansion, the scene of the crime. And we weren't alone. Tony had been a hard sell to get here. Getting him to bring the others as well was nearly impossible. But he eventually agreed to play along with the melodrama. I promised him that this would either wrap things up or he could shoot me. I wasn't really sure which one of the two he was rooting for. So we gathered in the dining room, late, 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 on a quiet, moonless night. Tony, Ona, Tua, and Thria, her two nymphs perched upon her shoulders. The Fallons were there as well, as were Opie and W, all of whom were out on bail and under the watchful eye of a dozen of Tony's officers and detectives. W, by the way, was still missing his android arms and legs. He was attached to a special wheelchair for easy movement. Yeah, the gang was all there. They had been gathered because I had promised to reveal the identity of the killer.
Now, it's hard to play this type of scene without it seeming campy. You have to start small and let it build.
You can go now, Harv.
And just remember, when you get to the revelation, you need to really punch it. J'accuse!
That's it, Harv. No more mystery books for you. Now get to the coroner's office.
Right, boss. I'll let you know when the results are in. Think really loudly if you need me before then.
Let's go, Zach. Keep this moving.
I turned and walked toward the huge table at which they were all seated. So, I suppose you're all wondering why I gathered you here tonight.
You're not going to use every cliché, are you?
Only the ones that are relevant. And trust me, you'll appreciate this when this is over.
Get to the point, Zach.
Right. I've gathered you all here tonight because I know who killed Fora Thompson. And that person is in this room.
Aha! He's that person! That proves I'm innocent!
Opie, one thing I've learned after all this is that no one is innocent. You better sit down and let me finish. Opie sat down, then leaned over to W.
He's that person. I'm an ape.
And I'm a human head grafted onto a limbless android torso. What's your point?
Okay, what I meant to say is that the killer is in this room. We all know the circumstances of Fora's death, and I guess everyone's pretty much caught up on everything that's happened since then. So let's just cut to the chase. Computer?
Yes, Mr. Johnson?
Playback, please.
As you wish.
Once again, we saw Ona lead her sisters into the dining room and take their places at the sumptuously prepared table.
I'll say once again how happy I am that you could all come this evening on such short notice, although I'm sure your schedules can't be nearly as full as mine.
Yeah, being a whore must be so demanding.
Please,
Zach,
Fora, don't be so cruel.
We've already seen this.
Whores
not like this, you haven't.
For a living.
Trust me.
W worked especially hard on the table for this evening. He began 4 days ago, six if you count the polishing. Sadly, he's not as fast as he used to be, but I think you'll agree that everything is perfect.
Ugh, like that's a good
thing.
Freeze
it there, computer. The playback froze on the image of Fora standing at her place at the table, staring down at the setting. Zoom in on her hand. A cursor highlighted her left hand and enlarged it to clearly show her gloved index finger gently touching the handle of a tiny fork. Murder attempt number one. The handle of that small fork was coated with T&D, a deadly poison that enters the bloodstream through the skin. The culprit? W. I pointed dramatically toward W.
Shocking.
W had been embezzling credits from Ona's household budget for years in order to purchase an illegal super android body to replace his human frame, which had become withered with age. But Fora found out about his plan and threatened to expose him to Ona. So W coated one of the forks at Fora's play setting with poison and left it slightly askew, knowing that Fora, like all the quads, was a stickler for perfection. She saw the fork out of place, nudged it with her fingertip, thus infecting herself with the poison and sealing her fate. There was just one problem.
Her glove.
That's right. Fora wore gloves, so the poison never made contact with her skin. W should have known that. After all, Fora had been wearing gloves like that since she was a child. What do you think, W? Perhaps age has affected your memory as well as your body.
And to think I served him tea.
And I gave him a beer. What's your point?
Zach, we already know about W's attempt on Fora's life, and we know he's not the real killer.
True. Let's move on. Computer, skip ahead to point B.
Oh, please, sister. You couldn't spell justice if it wasn't monogrammed under your spandex chest.
J-U-S-double-D!
That's it!
You monster! Slay the super bad!
Freeze it there. The recording stopped, and I pointed to the far edge of the frame away from the action, to where Fora sat, quietly watching her sister's tussle. Isolate and enlarge this portion. Fora's calm form soon filled the screen. I motioned toward the screen, but moved past Fora's image, and went instead to the small spherical bot that was hovering 2 meters behind her. As you can see, Fora's attention at this nano was focused on her sister's, rather than on this tiny security bot back here, allowing the bot to do this. The playback resumed in slow motion, and we saw a tiny flash erupt from the small bot. This bot has just fired an assassin-type smart dart, which is loaded with a highly concentrated amount of a deadly poison. This is murder attempt number 2 of the evening. The culprit, or culprits, I should say, the Fowens. I spun around and pointed an accusing finger at Sturm and Drong. They didn't seem to notice. For years, the Fowens had been stealing Ona's designer clothing and selling it to collectors through illegal auction sites. They'd made a fortune doing this and had come to rely on the income, especially since they had priced themselves out of the medical research market. Fora found out about their dealings and threatened to expose them to Ona, so the only way the Fowens could maintain their cash flow was by killing her.
But they failed.
That's right, Tony. The Fowens forgot that Fora, like all the quads, was impervious to most projectile-type weapons. The dart couldn't penetrate her skin. It fell into the collar of her jacket, where it disintegrated in nanos, as it was designed to do. For those scoring at home, that's 2 murder attempts and 2 failures.
That's all very nice, Zach, but we know this already. I thought you were going to reveal the identity of Fora's killer.
I will, Ona. I just want to point out here that 3 of the people in your employ made attempts on Fora's life that night. Murder attempts that were necessary to protect illegal activity that had been going on under your force field.
Your point being?
My point is that you have so isolated yourself from the reality of the outside world that your judgment has become clouded. You need to be more careful with the people you employ.
Clearly.
Okay, Zach, let's skip ahead to the real killer now.
Fine. Computer, take us to point C. This time the recording jumped forward by only a few nanos. The spat between Tuathria and the nymphs had ended, and Ona had restored order.
We'll let the wine breathe for a few nanos. Now, as I was saying, after everything I've done for this world, after all the good that I've created with my wealth, aiding underprivileged children, funding disease research, after devoting my vast fortune to raising the quality of life for every downtrodden person in the first through fourth worlds, I just want to say that it is you, my family, who are still foremost in my heart.
Stop. And that, for all intents and purposes, is when the murder took place.
I don't get it, Zach. Nothing happened. No one moved.
Something happened, all right, Tony. We just didn't see it. Ona, what's wrong with what we just saw?
That wasn't my complete speech.
What?
That was my great humanitarian speech. I give it a lot. But it's missing the portion that talks about my driving programs for environmental renewal and reinvention. That part isn't there.
I could tell by the gleam of her eyes that Ona was starting to figure things out.
You mean the recording has been tampered with?
There was some kind of technical glitch when Ms. Thompson's computer first downloaded the material to us. It accidentally skipped over a small portion of the playback. The glitch wasn't discovered and rectified until tonight.
Pretty odd coincidence that this glitch happened at such a vital point in the playback.
True, but as I recall, the experts in your department studied the recordings quite closely. If their well-trained eyes didn't notice the glitch, then certainly you can't blame any of us for not noticing. Tony and I stared at one another, neither of us totally comfortable with where this line of conversation was leading.
Since we started putting these jobs up for bids, we've gotten some pretty lousy experts.
Let's just hope that when this all turns out well in the end, we can all just forget about that silly glitch.
Agreed. Now, let's have a look at the corrected version.
Computer, if you please. The scene we had just watched began over again. This time, however, it included a murder. Ona picked the wine bottle up again, and without letting her imperious gaze leave her sister's, pulled the cork with a corkscrew. Then she set the bottle down in front of her. The poison saturated the wine. Oddly, though, there was no trace of it on the cork. That means that the poison was added to the wine after opening.
We'll let the wine breathe for a few nanos. Now, as I was saying, after everything I've done for this world, after all the good that I've created with my wealth, aiding underprivileged children, funding disease research...
And then it happened, in the span of a single phrase. One of Thria's nymphs took to the air and flew toward the unconscious nymph in the wine glass.
Driving programs for environmental renewal and reinvention.
Tua tried to slap it away. The nymph avoided the swat, but bumped directly into the wine bottle. The impact caused it to tip, as though it were about to spill. Tua and Thria both grabbed at it, the bottleneck slipping awkwardly from their hands until Ona finally steadied it with her own hand. She glared at both Tua and Thria, who moved quickly back to their places. Ona waited a beat.
After devoting my vast fortune to raising the quality of life for every downtrodden person in the first through fourth worlds, I just want to say that it is you, my family, who are still foremost in my heart.
Stop. Computer, take it back just a little. The recording rewound to the point where the wine bottle began to tip. Enlarge the bottle and give it to us in slow-mo. There it was. As the bottle began to tip, Tua and Thria lunged for it, grasping the neck and body with their finely shaped hands. Their actions at first glance appeared a little clumsy, as one, then the other, grabbed and lost hold of the bottle. But enlarged and in super slow motion, we could see the clumsiness for what it was, a perfectly orchestrated dance of death. Thria's hand moved smoothly over the bottle's opening as it slipped from her grasp. As it did so, a small compartment in one of her rings opened and dumped a small payload of black powder into the bottle. Then the bottle flipped to Tua's hand, and a tiny vial appeared from between her gloved fingers. Smoothly, she emptied the vial's black powdery contents into the wine, just as Ona's hand came down to steady the bottle. It took less than 2 seconds, start to finish, for it to happen, but the deadly trap had been set. As one, everyone in the room turned their gaze to Tua and Thria.
That's preposterous! Clearly, someone has tampered with that recording.
Why would we kill Fora?
It could have been because she wouldn't join your lawsuit. The three of you together could have forced Ona to settle and divide your father's fortune. Her claim that she didn't want her share of the wealth complicated things to no end. But that's not why you killed her, is it?
Why then?
The truth of the matter is that Fora wasn't the target. Ona was. After all this time, Tua and Thria realized that the only way to get Ona's fortune was over her dead body. So they poisoned the wine, knowing that when Ona proposed her toast, it would be the last words she would ever say. The two of you would just pretend to drink. That way you'd get rid of Ona and lay claim to her fortune. Killing Fora here would just be a bonus. With her gone, you'd have to split the fortune in half rather than thirds. And you used Ona's DNA to create the poison rather than your own to avoid suspicion.
But where did they get Ona's DNA? That poison was pretty pure.
From the Fowens. Harv hacked into the records of the Fowens' auction sites. Several of the dresses they sold, the sweat-stained dresses, were purchased by dummy corporations controlled by Tua and Thria. They were able to distill enough DNA from the sweat and skin follicles on the dresses over time to create the DNA tag for the poison.
This is all some wild fantasy.
Well, you would know, wouldn't you, Thria? But there's one more thing. Computer? The computer flashed a picture onto the wall screen of the dying clue that Fora had drawn in the wine. This equation, which Fora drew in the wine puddle before she died, is a carefully constructed clue to the identity of her killers. It's well hidden, but it had to be because she had to hide the information from the killers, who, as we know, are genius intellects. The solution to the equation is V.
Well, you mean the letter V?
Actually, the number. A Roman numeral, to be exact, signifying 5, or...
2 and 3 together. How could you?
Don't start with us, Ona. Captain Ricky, I want to speak with my army of attorneys.
They'll meet you at the station house.
Tony nodded to his detectives, who stood 2 and 3 up and shackled their hands with neurocuffs. For good or bad, the case seemed closed. And that's when everything suddenly went very, very bad. It began, unsurprisingly, with a message from Harv.
Hey, boss. How'd the big scene go?
About as well as it could, all things considered. Do you have the autopsy results?
Yeah, well, about that, boss. The autopsy is one of those classic good news, bad news things.
Harv, your classic good news, bad news things never seem to contain any real good news. Okay, let's have it.
The good news is that we were able to perform a complete autopsy on Forward Thompson.
And the bad news?
It turns out he's not dead.
Tony knew right away that something was wrong, and he was at my side before I could say another word. I had the presence of mind to activate my wrist communicator and bring Harv's visage to the tiny screen.
What's wrong?
Just about everything. Harv, define for us, please, what you mean by not dead.
Not dead? Who's not dead?
It would appear that Miss Thompson only feigned death.
Are you saying that Fora's not dead?
Harv, she was in the morgue for 3 days. The coroner shot her with lasers. You stuck her with anal probes.
Yes, I feel a little bad about that.
Are you sure that she's not dead?
Oh, I'm sure, all right.
How?
Because 5 minutes ago she got up off the slab and walked out.
What?
Harv, let me speak to the coroner.
I'm afraid he's occupied at present.
What do you mean?
Harv's image disappeared from the interface and was replaced with a live feed from the security camera in the main examination room. There we saw Lenny Shakes standing atop the examination table.
Dear was. Why is he doing the freaky geeky?
Because Fora Thompson is alive and well and apparently none too pleased about those anal probes.
Say what?
Captain, come quick!
Tony and I turned just in time to see the forms of Tua and Thria bathed in an increasingly bright silver light. And then, with a blinding flash, they disappeared. The neurocuffs they'd been wearing fell to the floor. Uh-oh.
What was that?
It looked like teleportation.
Teleportation without a pad? That's impossible!
Harv, get over here. I need you to track a teleportation trail. Harv's hologram appeared beside me. He also had a holographic magnifying glass in his hand, by the way, signifying that his metamorphosis from butler to detective was now complete, for better or, more likely, worse.
There are definite teleportation energy traces. It looks like a smash and grab. Well, actually, just a grab.
Can you trace the energy signature?
It might take a nano or two.
Put a rush on it.
Will somebody please tell me what's going on here?
Well, Ona, as you know, 2 of your sisters killed your youngest sister and have now disappeared. The upside of this is that your youngest sister apparently isn't dead after all.
What?
And she's disappeared too. Did I mention that?
You mean Fora's alive?
That's our understanding.
Oh, dear. That's not good at all.
What do you mean by that?
Boss.
Hold on, Ona. Harv, have you traced the teleportation yet?
Still working on it. I just wanted to let you know that you have a call coming in from Carol.
Tell her I'm busy.
Theo, listen, there's a bit of an emergency here.
Carol was standing in front of what looked like a large, very dimly lit computer, and she seemed a little more intense than usual. I can't talk now, Carol. I have an emergency of my own here.
No, Zach, listen.
Carol, really, I have to go. I'll call you back. Tell me where you are.
New Vegas.
What are you doing in Vegas?
I'm on a job.
A job? You work for me.
It's kind of a second job. It's not like you pay all that well, and school and stuff are expensive.
Carol, I'll help you when I can, but right now I'm in the middle of something.
Theo, I don't think you heard me.
Boss, I've traced the signal.
I said that I'm in New Vegas.
I'll be there as soon as I can, Carol. Where can I find you?
I'll find you.
This is getting weirder and weirder by the nano.
What was that all about?
It looks like Fora, 2, and 3 are in Vegas. We better get going.
Whoa, Zach. Nobody goes anywhere until I get proper authority.
Tony, this is an emergency.
Well, then it won't be hard to get clearance. I have no jurisdiction in Vegas. If she's fled the province with her sisters, then we'll need federal clearance.
We don't have time for that.
Swear to me, Zach. Swear to me that you won't run off to New Vegas on your own until I get clearance. Otherwise, I'll arrest you right now.
I stared at Tony. He was one of my oldest friends. I couldn't lie to him again, could I? Fine, I won't run off to New Vegas on my own. I'll go to my office and wait for you there.
I'm going to hold you to that.
I can't believe you lied to Captain Ricky.
I didn't lie. I went back to my office, I waited for him, but he didn't show up.
You waited all of 10 seconds, and that was just to reload your gun with your new ammo from Dr. Poole.
I never said how long I would wait.
You said you wouldn't go off on your own.
I'm not on my own. I have you, remember? Harv's face became quite pensive.
I guess you're right. But speed should be of the essence, and this car is too slow. You should wait for Captain Ricky.
You're right. Speed is important. That's why I'm not waiting. By the time Tony cuts through all the red tape, I'll be in Vegas with the case closed. I opened the door of my Class 2020 Mustang. But before I could even get in, I looked to the sky, and there was a hovercraft right above me, coming down fast. Don't tell me it's hostile.
Only partly. It's Captain Ricky.
The craft landed beside me.
Get in.
Before I knew it, we were in Tony's hovercraft and on the skyway, tearing flat out toward New Vegas at 400 kilometers per hour. Tony was behind the wheel, white knuckles on the steering column, heavy foot on the accelerator. Harv's hologram was in the back seat, a smile on his face, and a wind effect whipping through his digitally enhanced hair. I was in the passenger seat, trying hard to remember the prayers I learned during my brief time in Sunday school.
What did you get from Randy's lab?
How'd you know I went there?
I have my sources.
He gave me these.
What?
I pulled a small gray box from my pocket and popped the lid to show Tony.
Earplugs?
They're psi blockers.
What do we need these for?
I'm guessing because Fora's a psi.
She's what?
She just feigned death for 3 days and turned an experienced forensic pathologist into a 21st century village person. Clearly, she has very strong psionic abilities. Her being a psi also explains Opie's erratic behavior and how he knew so much about the crime scene when he never even saw it.
Fora was controlling him, having him leak information to the press.
Controlling people from beyond the grave. And apparently, now that she's no longer dead, she's manipulating others.
She was in a deep state of concentration during her time in the morgue. We know she manipulated opium shakes. Who knows what else she was doing?
How come we never knew she was psionic?
No one ever knew because she never told anyone. She kept it secret. There's no way of telling how long she's been aware of her abilities.
Or how long she's been manipulating people.
Oh, there's a scary thought.
I'm pretty sure they're all psis.
That's my assumption.
All of who?
The quads.
How come they've never told anyone?
Because they either don't know it or they don't care. As long as they have superpowers, I don't think it matters to them where they come from. Who knows which of their powers are real and which are augmented with their psionics?
Ona's pheromones are real, but I suspect she supplements them with psionic suggestion.
She just doesn't know she's doing it. It also explains Thria's fairy realm and why Harv couldn't register its location. The entire realm is a psionic illusion.
The nymphs, too.
Exactly. The poison was supposed to affect only the Thompson quads, remember? But the nymph supposedly died from it.
Because Thria knew about the poison and her mind subconsciously made it affect the nymph.
And when she thought the nymph was dead, she stopped thinking about it.
So it faded away.
Exactly.
By the way, have I mentioned that it's raining?
Where?
In New Vegas.
It never rains in Vegas. Isn't there a law or something?
It's raining quite hard at the Nano. You remember the torrential rain we had in Frisco recently?
How could I forget?
Well, as you'll remember, it stopped shortly after Fora Thompson's apparent murder. It was at that Nano that it began raining in Vegas, and it hasn't stopped since.
Are you trying to say that Fora can control the weather?
When it comes to the quads, I wouldn't rule anything out.
So I guess we'll be needing these, then. I took the side blockers out of the box. I gave one set to Tony, who took them and put them in his shirt pocket, without turning his gaze from the skyway.
Side blockers are illegal, you know. Dangerous, too. They cause brain damage.
Not to worry. Dr. Poole has substantially reconfigured the design.
So they don't cause brain damage? I slid the blockers into my ears.
No, they're just no longer illegal. He hasn't been able to solve the brain damage part yet.
What? I yanked the blockers out of my ears.
The risk is minimal compared to common blockers, but you shouldn't wear them for any lengthy period of time.
Why would we wear them at all, then?
Because you're about to confront a person who may well be the most powerful psi on the planet. Trust me, your minds are going to need every shred of protection they can get.
Good point. Any estimates of how powerful she is?
This is just conjecture on my part, boss, but I think if she wanted to, Fora Thompson could have bent the will of every person in New Frisco. Without those blockers, she could probably turn you into her own personal foot-licking puppy.
Fine, I'll wear them.
Remind me never to take any long road trips with the two of you.
Do we have a rendezvous time and place for the reinforcements when we arrive in Vegas?
Not exactly.
Will they be able to find us with a tracking device or something?
No, not exactly.
I don't suppose not exactly is police code for sure, you betcha.
We have no reinforcements, Zach.
What?
The department wouldn't authorize it.
But why?
Because with Fora alive, there's no longer a murder. The case has been closed. The commissioner figures we've gotten enough PR out of the case, and it would lose its crowd appeal if we pushed it much more.
There was attempted murder.
and the perpetrators have been captured.
Two and three are missing.
It doesn't become a missing persons case for 48 hours.
But for a feigned death.
That's currently not a crime.
She drove the coroner mad.
Also not a crime, and we can't concretely prove that.
Yeah, but she's...
She's what, exactly?
I don't know, but she's up to something. I can feel it in my gut.
Surprisingly, that's not enough to get an arrest warrant.
So there's no help coming from Frisco?
None.
What about the Vegas authorities?
I called the New Vegas PD, and they said that Fora was a fine, upstanding citizen.
Great.
Don't worry. I have a friend from the academy who's on the New Vegas PD. He'll help us out.
I thought the Vegas police said that Fora was a good citizen.
That's the official line. My buddy will help us unofficially.
Captain Ricky, if the New Frisco Police Department considers this a closed case, then why are you here with us?
Because, as of 35 minutes ago, I am no longer a member of the New Frisco PD.
What?
They forbade me from going after Fora. The commissioner said that if I did, he'd take my badge.
What did you do?
I took off my badge, put it on his desk, and told him where he could stick it.
I'm sorry, Tony. I know how much being a cop means to you.
It's not being a cop that matters to me, Zach. It's doing the right thing. What we're doing here is the right thing. I don't need a badge to know that.
You trust me that much?
Sort of.
Sort of?
When the commissioner threatened to take my badge, he was also dancing the freaky geeky. I figured that couldn't be a coincidence.
It was the kind of laughter when you know that you're headed straight into the heart of darkness. Soldiers into battle, sailors into the storm, pop stars into a music critics convention. The sound of those who have nothing to lose. Well then, put your side blockers in, Mr. Ricky, because I'm not about to dance the freaky geeky with you. We landed in New Vegas shortly thereafter, in a lot near the police station on the Strip. True to Harv's words, it was raining about as hard as I've ever seen it. Like the sky itself was angry. The New Vegas Strip somehow looked even brighter in the torrent, its neon essence magnified by the water in the air. What's the plan?
My buddy's on duty tonight. I'm going to let him know we're here.
Should I go with you?
No, Zach, it's best if you stay here for now. You're not exactly loved by police officers.
Yeah, but that's in Frisco. They don't know me here in Vegas.
No, actually, word gets around.
That's comforting. Are you sure your buddy will help us?
There's an unspoken agreement amongst all cops, Zach. We help one another. If one cop comes looking for help, the others are duty-bound to come to his aid. It's a code of honor for those on the job.
You know, of course, that officially you're no longer a cop, right?
Don't bother me with details now.
He activated his umbrella force field and got out of the hover. Harv and I watched as he walked toward the station house, the heavy rain bouncing off his shield like tiny fireworks.
You think the police will help us?
Yeah, Tony made a good case with the code of honor stuff, so who knows. Any idea where we can start searching for Fora?
She used to preach in the ballroom of the Oblivion Hotel and Casino. We could try there.
A casino actually let her preach about the evils of greed in the material world under their roof?
They welcomed it. People would be so depressed after hearing Fora speak, they'd actually enjoy losing money at the gaming tables. The Oblivion is nearby, just 2 kilometers to the north. Oh, look, Captain Ricky is coming out of the station house. He seems excited.
Tony seemed to be in a hurry, and there was a trail of police officers following him.
Interesting. Captain Ricky seems to be yelling something. I'm going to zoom in on him and try to read his lips.
Start the engine.
You're right. That's what Captain Ricky seems to be yelling. Start the engine. How did you know that?
Tony was now running full speed. A dozen angry New Vegas cops were hot on his heels, waving their blasters. Harv, interface with the hover and start the engine.
Lean forward and look at the ignition so I can rewire it.
As I leaned over, a beam of light transmitted from my eye and bathed the chip in electrons. The hover lurched forward like a spastic frog as I switched off the parking brake. Tony was close now, waving his arms and signaling for help. The police officers behind him had stopped and were now aiming their blasters at us.
I think you better open the door for him.
Good idea. How do I do that? Harv disappeared into the dash computer.
Honestly, you'd be lost without me.
The hover rose a meter off the ground and smoothly pivoted, turning the passenger door toward the mad dashing Tony. The door popped open just as Tony leapt to avoid the barrage of blaster fire. His hands caught the doorframe, and he pulled himself inside as Harv took the hover into the air.
Get us out of here now!
We're as good as gone. Preparing to take evasive action. Hold on.
Harv banked the craft hard to the right as we rose, rolling it onto its side and pulling us away from the pursuing police officers.
I guess the police code of honor doesn't extend all the way to Vegas.
I don't get it. They seemed so normal at first, and they all turned on me. All I did was mention Fora.
It would appear that Miss Thompson already has her mental hooks deep into the police.
So what do we do now?
We're in Vegas, Tony. What else can we do? We're going to the nearest casino and hope we get lucky.
The Oblivion Hotel and Casino isn't the most popular place in the New Vegas Strip. Truth to tell, it's one of the bottom links on the slot junkie food chain. But it wasn't always this way. The casino's owner is a now infamous billionaire named Heinrich Schwipe, who earned his money the old-fashioned way. His overbearing father died and left it to him. Shortly after his father's death, Schwipe came to New Vegas with a billion credits in his pocket and a dream to build the world's greatest casino. He wanted to create something dark and hopeless that would fly in the face of the typical Vegas glitz and glitter. The result was the Oblivion. It was big and black on the outside and shaped like a warped hourglass, with a wide base that tapered inward as it rose and then widened again for the uppermost 20 floors. It was completely free of all lighted signs, which caused a stir in the community, because at the time, not having neon on a building was illegal in Vegas. But Schwipe eventually got a waiver from the Vegas Board of Edifice Rules and Standards, and his neonless project got built, just as he planned. When it was finished, it stood out on the strip like a missing tooth in a beauty queen smile. Inside, the place was about as cheery as a tar pit, dark and cavernous and a little damp. But for some reason, the whole dark and dreary look came into vogue with the East Coast art crowd, and the casino became a hotspot. Cultural critics said that its atmosphere of hopelessness was a masterstroke of marketing and design, its brutal honesty flying in the face of the empty smiles of its competitors. The casino's gloom also attracted the hardened gambler, who felt right at home in its dour air, as well as the directionless youngsters of Generation Y Me. So for many years, the casino prospered, and the mysterious Schwipe was hailed as the gloomy genius of New Vegas. It was learned later, however, that Schwipe wasn't a genius. He was instead just a very, very unhappy guy. The official diagnosis was severe clinical depression with suicidal tendencies, and it turned out that he'd been that way since childhood. His dark and hopeless design for the casino didn't come from any hip nihilist philosophy or innate brilliance, but rather from his own depressed soul. He had created the casino as a reflection of himself, not as a genius, but as a sad man. And that sort of blew the illusion. The casino was no longer hip, it was simply pathetic, and the customers left in droves. The only thing that still draws real numbers of people to the casino these days is the spectacularly bizarre fountain, but I'll get to that later. In any event, Fora had preached her gospel at the casino for a number of years, so we figured that this was the best place to start searching for her. The bouncers working the casino door were Elvis-enhanced, surgically altered with a synthesized version of Elvis Presley DNA, which allows them to take on Elvis-like physical qualities. One bouncer was the Fat Elvis of early 1970s, circa the concert in Hawaii. The other was the Love Me Tender period, thin and good-looking.
Sorry, folks. The casino's closed to the public tonight.
But I have all this money, and I'm very unlucky.
Well, come on back tomorrow, sir.
You're welcome to partake of the fountain, though. It's right around the corner.
Well, what's going on inside?
Private party.
Didn't I mention that we were here for the party?
You said you were here to gamble.
Gamble, party, it's all the same in Vegas, right?
Please move along, sir.
Come on, Zach, let's go.
No, wait! We're invited, really. We're very close personal friends with Fora.
The Elvis clone's gazes turned steely, and their hands, very subtly, went to the blaster-sized bulges of their coats.
Who said anything about Fora?
Well, he didn't say Fora.
Fora? No, I didn't say that. I said...
Nora!
Yeah, that's it. We're friends of Nora. Nora Noyes.
We love Nora.
It's her birthday today, and she's having her party at the Desperation Casino.
This isn't the Desperation.
It's not?
This is the Oblivion. The Desperation's south of here.
Are you sure? Because this really looks like the Desperation.
They're sure. Let's go.
Well, if you say so. Thanks for your help, guys. I'll bring you back some cake from Nora's party.
The Elvis bouncers were silent as Tony finally pulled me away. We mixed in with a crowd of tourists and walked south for a bit, until we were comfortably away from the Oblivion.
What now?
I think we've established that something odd is going on inside.
We'll have to find another way in. There must be a service entrance.
There's a hoverport for high rollers on the roof. We could try that.
Good idea.
Harv, bring the hover around back. We'll meet you there.
Got it, boss.
We ducked into an alleyway and doubled back toward the casino. New Vegas alleys are dark and relatively deserted. Mainstream traffic tends to stay on the well-lit strip. The alleyways, by design, are reserved for some of the city's more illicit activities.
Hey, boy. You looking for a date?
Some other time, ladies.
Hey, guys. Got some stuff here that will alter your mind, expand your consciousness.
No thanks, pal.
Psst. Gentlemen, care to purchase some untraceable weapons?
What is this, Crime Alley?
Keep your cop instincts in check, Tony. We're here for bigger fish.
Psst. Cheat on your taxes for you, man?
They really cover all the bases here, don't they?
I don't want to think about it. By the way, how do we plan to find Foro once we're in the casino?
We'll figure it out when we get inside.
I'm not comfortable going into this without a plan, Zach.
Well, I'm not comfortable going into this at all, but we have to play the hand we're dealt. The plan is fluid, Tony. It always is. Tony cast a glance behind us.
Does the plan include perhaps some desperate running for our lives?
What? I turned to follow his gaze and saw the two bouncers from the casino enter the alley, blasters drawn. Tony and I ran as the energy blasts tore up the alley around us. Harv!
I'm on my way, boss, but I can't get the hover into that alley. You'll have to get to the fountain.
Tweet! Not that stupid fountain!
It's the nearest spot, boss, and you're headed in the right direction.
Fine. Keep running, Tony. And when we turn that corner up ahead, keep your head down.
What do you mean?
The two Elvises, the hookers, and now the crooked accountant were all hot on our tails, firing away like drunken postal workers, just missing us as we neared the corner.
What's that noise?
Just keep your head down. We rounded the corner out of the alley and into the courtyard. I looked around quickly to get my bearings and locate Harv in the hovercraft. That was my big mistake. Something thick and red splattered on the wall behind me, and I staggered sideways before falling to the ground.
Zach! It's okay. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be... Everything's...
Is this marinara sauce?
Must be pasta day. And we were hit with another barrage of flying food. Okay, the fountain at the Oblivion. I've already mentioned how odd Heinrich Schweip was, the owner and designer of the Oblivion Casino, right? Well, you have to keep that in mind in order to fully understand and appreciate the Oblivion's famous fountain. Schweip's depression drove him not to drugs, alcohol, or sex, all of which are good choices, but rather to food. He was a binge eater. A binge eater's binge eater. All kinds of food, all hours of the day, when the mood struck him, and it struck him often, he would eat. It was a convenient and all too common way of drowning one's sorrows. Schweip just took the destructive behavior to new lows. So with that in mind, it's not surprising that any casino Schweip designed would have a 24/7 all-you-can-eat buffet. The problem was that the traditional buffets weren't fast enough or enormous enough to meet Schweip's grandiose dreams. The delivery of the food had to be more immediate, the display had to be more dramatic, and the scale of the project had to be more flamboyant. The inspiration came to him during a visit to the old Caesars Casino, where he saw the throng of tourists taking pictures of one another beside the great fountain. Then he went to dinner, where the three-year-old at the booth next to him threw lima beans at his shirt. He put two and two together and came up with the most disgusting four imaginable. Thus was born the famous Fountain Buffet, a mammoth marble sculpture 25 meters tall and elaborately carved by the world's finest craftspots. And every nano of every day, it spews forth from its elaborate system of tubing a spectacular array of food. Yeah, it's a food-spewing fountain. Turkey breast, manicotti, fruit salad, egg salad, chocolate mousse, shrimp cocktail, bacon bits, and those little cocktail weenies in that weird red sauce. Any food you've ever seen on a buffet table, salad bar, or smorgasbord at one time or another is pumped into the air by the Oblivion Fountain. And every nano of every day, hungry people from all over the world dress themselves in rubber raincoats and goggles and make their way down to the courtyard to partake in the white trash Dionysian display. It's one of the icons of the New Vegas Strip, a monument to excess and vulgarity, and a testimony to the success of Crass. I will say, however, that it has the best darn onion rings I've ever tasted. This was the first time Tony had ever seen the food-spewing fountain in person, and he froze at the sight.
It does. You see this thing on HV, but it doesn't begin to compare with the real thing.
I was on the ground, still stunned by the lasagna hit I'd taken to the head. I cast a quick glance around the courtyard.
Harv, where's the hover?
I'm at the northeastern corner of the courtyard, boss. I can't get any closer without creating a scene. The crowd's too heavy.
I turned back toward the alley and saw the hookers, the accountant, and the two Elvis bouncers emerge and scan the crowd in search of us.
Tony, Harv and the hover are in the northeast corner. Let's go.
We kept our heads down as much as possible and started making our way through the crowd. Fortunately, we were the only ones in the area not wearing raincoats.
Tony, hurry!
We pushed our way through the throng more desperately until we saw the hovercraft. I turned to look for Tony, but instead saw only the thin Elvis. Well, all I actually saw was his fist, which hit me square in the face and sent me staggering, but I assumed the rest of him was attached to it. I fell back down to the pavement and looked up, just in time to see him aiming his blaster at me.
You should know, mister. Here in New Vegas, we don't like people who don't like Fora!
Suddenly he was sideswiped by what looked to be a few hundred kilos of flying ravioli. It knocked him over and covered him, neatly immobilizing him in a pile of tasty pasta, zesty sauce, and a tempting melange of spicy cheese and meat substitute fillings.
And you should know, mister, that I never liked Elvis.
I turned and saw Tony by the fountain. He had commandeered one of the feeder hoses and had used it to drop a Chef Boyardee bomb on my would-be killer.
Come on, let's get to the roof.
After the cacophony and chaos of the fountain buffet, the quiet of the casino's rooftop hoverport was a refreshing change. But as we climbed out of the hover and looked at the city spread out before us, we felt anything but refreshed. Pitch-black storm clouds encircled the oblivion like an atmospheric smoke ring. The lightning and driving rain they created stood in stark, startling contrast to the calm immediately surrounding the building. The oblivion was an island in a storm. I don't like this.
And don't ask me to explain it scientifically, because I can't.
Tony pulled a laser rifle from the trunk.
Zach, where's the entrance?
There was a small elevator booth near the edge of the roof.
Over there. Ditch the hover, Harv. We don't want it drawing attention. But keep it close by. We may need a fast escape.
Gotcha, boss.
The hover took to the air, leaving Tony and me alone on the rooftop. I popped my gun into my hand, and we walked quickly toward the elevator.
Thanks for the save back there.
Don't mention it.
You were kidding when you said you didn't like Elvis, right?
Let's not go into that now, Zach.
Tony pressed the button on the side of the booth, and we heard the elevator start to rise.
But everybody likes Elvis.
Don't start with me, Zach.
Fat Elvis was in the elevator car, a laser rifle in his hands.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Tony, look out!
I pushed Tony aside, but the blast hit me point blank, full in the chest. And I felt my armor surge as it tried to absorb and disperse the energy. It succeeded. The problem was that it couldn't absorb the sheer force, and that sent me right off the edge of the roof.
Zach!
I felt the damp air rush past me, slapping my face like an angry wet hand as I did the 32 feet per second backflip toward the street 50 stories below. Then, suddenly, a warm glow swept through my body, and I was engulfed in darkness. I opened my eyes and found myself in a large, barren room lit only in spots by tiny purple lights.
If this is heaven, it's highly overrated.
My, someone thinks a lot of himself.
Carol? This is stranger than being mauled by Elvis clones.
She slowly helped me into a sitting position.
Now, is that any way to greet the person who just saved your life?
Where are we?
A spaceship, fully cloaked and in geosynchronous orbit, 310 kilometers over New Vegas.
No, really. Where are we?
Trust me, we're on a spaceship.
What are we doing on a spaceship?
Saving the world.
Oh, good. I hoped it might be something important. How did I get here?
Teleportation beam. We locked onto you the nano you entered New Vegas. We just needed to wait for a time when your disappearance wouldn't be noticed.
I closed my eyes and sent a quick thought to Harv.
Harv, get a fix on our position, and let me know what the dust is going on here. Harv?
Your cerebral interface with Harv won't be functional aboard this ship, Dio. You're under a nullifier.
Why?
My employers want to make sure that none of this is recorded.
Carol, I'm your employer.
I had to take a second job. You don't pay that well, remember?
This is too weird.
Tio, there isn't a lot of time to waste now, so you're going to have to understand and accept some things very quickly in order to get through this. My employers weren't all that confident in you, but I convinced them to test you.
Test me?
That old lady doppelganger you ran into a few days ago, that was their work. Their test. You passed, barely. But they figured they could at least give you a chance.
They who? On cue, three tall, thin forms stepped out of the darkness and into the purple haze of the tiny spotlights overhead. They were pale, hairless, and very large of forehead. Their huge dark eyes were pupilless. Gladians. The planets GLAD 7 and GLAD 9 are two of Earth's three interplanetary trading partners. Together, the two planets supply Earth with roughly 65% of the energy it requires. In exchange for this energy, we give them dirt. And I don't mean that metaphorically. We literally give them dirt. Hundreds of kilotons of it every year. We don't ask what they do with it. Frankly, we don't really care, so long as we get the energy we so desperately require. Needless to say, Earth-Gladian commerce is vitally important to all three planets. But even though our societies are so dependent upon one another, relations between Earth and the Gladians have always been at arm's length, and contact between the races, by design, has been kept to a minimum. Everyone on Earth, for instance, knows where our energy comes from, but very few people have ever seen an actual Gladian. There are no public diplomatic envoys, there's no free exchange of ideas, and there is no tourist trade. They're aliens, after all, with customs, biology, and beliefs that are radically different from our own. So the World Council's philosophy has traditionally been to keep a tight leash on interplanetary mingling and study it from all angles before going forward. The fear is that unchecked intermingling could ruin relations or create environmental and/or biological disasters. The official line on the Gladians is that they keep to themselves. There are rumors, however, that they have planted a number of agents within our society to study our ways and monitor our actions. Carol, what's going on?
Fora Thompson is a threat. The Gladians have been monitoring the situation for some time, and they feel that she needs to be taken out of commission.
How could Fora pose a threat to the Gladians?
They rely on our dirt, Tio. They need to protect their interests. They had hoped that Earth would be able to handle the situation internally. At the Nano, that doesn't seem very likely, so they're stepping in. Covertly, of course.
Stepping in?
With a very large shoe.
What does that mean?
This ship is 25 kilometers long and weighs approximately 24 million kilotons.
And?
And they plan to drop it on top of Fora.
They're gonna crash the ship into Vegas?
They're a peaceful race. They don't have any weapons, so they've been forced to improvise.
By destroying Vegas?
Actually, it will destroy most of the western portion of North America, what with the fault lines and all. It will also create a cloud of dust in the atmosphere that will blot out much of the sunlight for the foreseeable future. Crops will die, leading to global starvation. There will be radical shifts in climate, which will create environmental catastrophes on a global scale. It could possibly bring on another ice age, but I'm not certain of that. I can have them check, if you like.
I thought they were trying to protect their trade interests.
Earth's dirt will still be here. We'll probably be even more eager to sell it to them than before.
Earth won't give them anything after what they're about to do.
Earth won't know, Tio. This ship is composed almost entirely of organic material. It will seem to the world at large that the devastation was caused by a meteor crash.
They're gonna make it look like an accident? No one's gonna believe that.
You don't hear anyone complaining about the meteor crash in the Yucatan 65 million years ago, do you?
That was them?
Apparently, the dinosaurs were getting a little uppity.
Carol, you have to stop them.
No. You have to stop Fora Thompson.
But...
Trust me, Tio. If she gets the chance, Fora will do more to harm Earth and the galaxy than the Gladians could dream of causing.
How do I stop her?
You mean short of dropping a spaceship on her? I don't know. I'm just a Psi who moonlights as an alien translator. You're the one who prides himself on thinking on his feet.
One of the Gladians stepped forward from the others.
He says that they'll be monitoring you closely, and that you're not to tell anyone about their plan. They feel that would ruin trade relations. Gladians worry a lot. They're a pretty anal race. Well, you are. Bottom line, Zach, if you tell anyone about their presence here, they'll crash the ship immediately.
You speak their language?
Of course. I'd be a pretty lousy translator if I couldn't speak the language. Look, there's not a lot of time. You'll have 2 hours from now to stop Fora. If you can't do it by then, the Gladians will crash the ship.
Why are they giving me this chance at all?
Well, they like the situation they have with Earth as is. They don't adapt well to change in their routines. They trust me implicitly, and I trust you.
Why do they trust you so much?
They think of me as the next step in human evolution, the step that is closer to them. They seem to have some sort of vested interest in me. I don't question them too much about it. It just works for me. Plus, they are a secretive, annoying lot. Well, you are! I know you can do it, Tio.
Can the Gladians port me inside the Oblivion?
The casino's shielded. We can put you directly outside. You'll have to find your own way in.
And I have 2 hours, right?
Right.
She popped off one of my lapel buttons. She then replaced it with an almost identical one.
This button is a transmitter, so we can keep track of you. I don't dare risk contacting you telepathically without tipping off Fora. The Gladians will need to confirm that she's no longer a danger before backing off, but they'll wait for confirmation before crashing the ship. Do you understand?
Sure. Fora is, for some reason you can't tell me, a greater danger to Earth than a Gladian spaceship crashing into it. What's not to get?
Fora is powerful, too powerful. She's blocked all our scans. We just know she's dangerous. Very dangerous. We don't trust her.
Why me, Carol? Of all the people you could have called for this, why'd they choose me?
It's your destiny.
You're kidding, right?
You're incredibly lucky when it comes to these sorts of things. And we knew where to find you. Buena suerte, tío.